Evo, Bože, blagoslov. Smo dobro, jesmo, veseli. Pa lijepo vrijeme. Sunčano, možda krenulo proljeće. Kod nas skoro proljeće, za razliku od, ne znam, prije 2-3 tjedna je bila zima. Evo, tako, neko je rekao da više nema ovaj jesen i proljeća, nego odmah ili jako hladno ili jako toplo. I tako je nekako vrijeme. I u duhovnom nema, ili ćete biti jako hladni ili jako topli, ili tako. Bog me priznaje mlakost. Evo, drago mi je da sve, da smo tu. Gdje je sestra Bruna? Evo, sestra Bruna je čak došla iz Zagreba da bude s nama. Dakle, Bog blagoslovi. Imamo dobru tradiciju ili dobru praksu da prije službe najavimo novi prijevod i prevedena je propovijed poštovanje. Evo, moramo poštovati Košutu jer je prevela propovijed poštovanje. Tako da, evo, 61. godine, znači jako lijepa propovijed. Hvala je prije službe tamo, pa tako da, evo, ko nije pročitao, svakako preporuka. Mi smo danas planirali, što smo spomenuli prošli put, drugi dio svjedočanstva od brata Dawson Rileya. To je bilo zgodno sad, s obzirom da stoji prve... Šta nisam... Dobro. S obzirom da smo ovih desetak dana bili nešto boležljivi doma, neke viroze i nešto slično, pa smo se izredali, tako da je dobro da smo imali prijevod gotov. To je Becky prevela. Inače, da te titlove, to je dosta mukotrpan posao za prevesti, postaviti titlove za sat vremena. Izgubi čovjek po 2-3 tjedna da to napravi, jako možda treba sat vremena za jednu minutu ili ne znam tako, otprilike baš sporo ide, za razliku od one sinhronizacije, to je puno elegantniji i brži način. Ovo tehnički onako ide sporo, treba se naraditi oko toga, pa tako da imamo i taj dio. Mislim da su to sve najave koje sam imao, možemo pogledati glave. Dragi gospodi Bože, skupili smo se opet ovog jutra. Iskreno, Gospode, da se podsjetimo na to da si ti isti juče, danas i zauvijek, Gospode. I kad uzmemo tvoju riječ i kad čitamo događaje koje su se desili prije 2000 godina, Gospode, ono što nama daje snagu je to što znamo da to nije samo povijest. Ta isti Bog o kojem čitamo je isti Bog i danas i čini iste stvari, Gospode. I ti si nam dao ne tako davno i jasno natpravljenu potvrdu toga, Gospode, kroz prorokovu službu. Imamo priliku poslušati svjedočanstvo, Gospode, brata koji je bio sa prorokom i vidio ono što si ti činio, Gospode, i način na koji si potvrdio ovu poruku. Gospode, okupili smo se zapravo ne da veličamo čovjeka, nego tebe koji si isti juče, danas i zauvijek. Tvoju riječ, Gospode, koju si potvrdio, koju prevodimo. Evo, Gospode, imamo i danas jednu novu propovijed pred sobom. Hvala ti za to, Gospode. Molim te da ona dotakne srca, riješi probleme, ohrabri, promijeni i učini sve ono što čovjek ne može, ono nadprirodno što ti možeš, Gospode, u životima svih nas koji smo tu prisutni u ime Isusa Krista. Molimo te i predajemo ti službu u ime Isusa Krista. Amen. Amen. da je bilo samo doći otpivati ove pjesme, isplatilo bi se doći na službu, jel' tako? Evo, sad ćemo samo namjestiti malo projektor. Ako smeta ćemo malo. Ne, ako tebe, ako si ne, možemo.
Well, I'm back. We want to hear them other two pages that we didn't get this morning. Little Lynn, Sister Carol, good to see you all. So we'll just stand at this time and sing our Only Believe song and ask Brother Dawson just to come. And this is better than Paul Harvey's stories. So you're going to get the rest of the story tonight. And how I so immensely enjoyed what I heard, and how it rang true, had a true sound to it, didn't it? Here are things that I didn't touch on this morning, and I just jotted them down as they came to my mind or no particular order, and I don't know that I have
recall enough to put them in the proper sequence anyway. It's been a long time, as you know, but I will go through this list and tell you some more experiences I had. I'd like to take a moment and pray before I do. Dear Lord God, we thank you tonight. Lord, I ask that you help me recall accurately, Lord, and to say just the way it was. And not change anything, Lord, because I know I hold it important and I don't want to make a mistake. I've written this down the best I can. I ask that you come and bless it, Lord. And may I express what's on my heart. I thank you for these things. Bless this company of people, and we'll give you the praise in Jesus Christ's name. Amen. I had a sister ask me this morning if I would tell the young people and maybe the people that hadn't the opportunity to meet Brother Branham some of his characteristics and what it was like to be around him. And I've tried to jot down a few things that I was struck by, and as I get to them, I'll try to do that. Of course, the main thing that I did when I was living was hunting, so most of them are around the hunting story. So those of you that don't care about that will have to bear with me, because that's just what we were doing. And so that's all I can tell you is what we did. One time I had a particular problem this day. I had a client, and usually I told them to go home, but this time I had another outfitter with me, and he had brought the client. And so I said, so Brother Van rode with me, and this client rode with the other outfitter, and I said, what am I going to do? I think we're going to hit a land where I'm going, and I know I was bringing you for it, and this guy thinks he's going to get it. I don't know what we're going to do. He says, I wouldn't worry about it. And so we went up there. It was a long walk. It was up by Four Peaks, right here, over here by Four Peaks. We had walked quite a while, and the dogs hit a lion, and I ran down there and looked. It was a pretty big track. And I said, oh, this is a nice lion. I said, back to the deal. What are you going to do? He says, just let them work it. He says, we'll enjoy it. I don't have to kill it anyway. So anyway, so the dogs worked this line, and they started getting better and better. I knew they were going to catch it. I mean, it was getting sounding good. I liked the sound of it, you know. I said, hey, they're going to keep jumping right in that canyon. So they spilled over this lip of the canyon, and this other guy said, is that good? I said, yeah, it's pretty good. So Brother Branham asked me the funniest question. Here I am. I got real nice line dogs, and I'm proud of how broke they are. You know, they don't chase deer. They don't chase all these things. And he says, do your dogs ever run coyote? And I said, well, I've broken most of them off of it. But yeah, all of them had to be broken off coyote pretty much. Why do you ask? He said, I just wanted to know if they ran them. So they went off in this canyon, in which I knew we were about to jump this lion. And I looked over on the other bank, and there's a coyote running out of the bottom of that canyon. He heard the dogs too, and so he ran up, and some of my dogs looked over to him, and they started chasing him. And I was embarrassed, of course, but it took the pressure off. We didn't have to waste the lion, you know, with this regular client, you know. So my dogs chased the coyote, so I cut them off. I had the angle on them, and I cut it off, and I started catching my dogs. And I was young then, and I knew I could run. And I caught those dogs, and so I was giving a whipping, and Brother Brown gave it to me, and he says, that's enough, don't you think? I was getting into it, you know, because I don't think they were supposed to run it. They just ran it to solve our problem. And he says, I think that's enough. And I said, okay. And so I kind of let up on him. But that guy says, that other outfitter, he says, man, I thought sure we had that lion. Anyway, I thought it was kind of a funny way to get out of my problem, you know. And he knew it before. See, he knew it before what was going to happen, and I had that idea. It was just something that I wanted to write down and tell you about. On the tape that Brother Branham talks about, the Jack Mormon, who was my friend, he was a government hunter. Anyway, one day we were standing around. It was the day after we had the discussion I told you about this morning about the dog versus the horse. Well, Jerry came in, and he was a man of few words. In fact, he wasn't even very easy to get along with. He was just a real good line hunter. He wasn't much of a, you know, he didn't have any personality, but he's a nice guy. I mean, he's a good dog. No, he wasn't a nice guy. He was a good dog trainer. But anyway, he really understood how he just didn't understand people. At which I understand that too. But Jerry comes up and he said, "Dawson, does your friend ever help people out like this?" I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Yeah, but I usually don't bother him with stuff. What do you got? What are you talking about? He said, "You know well." I said, "Yeah. Well, Jerry's father had passed away, and he had a younger brother, and his dad had asked him before he left, because he knew Jerry saw no value in education at all, and didn't care about it, but Val, his father had wanted Val to have an education, and he was a very devoted, devout Mormon, not Jerry, but his younger brother, and I don't think Jerry ever went to church, ever, except to his funeral. He got a couple of funerals for his children. He never went to church that I knew about. But Val was very devout, and he wanted to go to BYU. Well, it took a lot of money, and Jerry wasn't making much. And so I told him I'd help him. And we'd take some extra lion hunters on the side. It was not illegal at the time for a government hunter to guide on the side, and so I helped him. I said, "We'll just take 200 or 300 hunters a year and help pay your tuition, and I'll do it that way." So Val got very sick. He was in the hospital. It's a very small hospital. If you're ever in the town of Salina, Utah, it's just a little brick building, a little rock building. It's, I don't know, 4 or 5 rooms. And he said he's going to have an operation in the morning. And he said, "I was just wondering if you'd pray for him." I was shocked. This man didn't even like preachers, you know. And at first, he got after me for bringing a preacher up there the year before. And so he said, we talked to him. I said, "Sure." So Brother Branham came up, and we were walking around out by some trees, and I said, we walked away from the house. I said, "Jerry's brother, Val, he's in the hospital for an operation in the morning. And he asked me if you ever prayed out here like this." He said, "You go have him go down to the hospital and bring him right now." Well, he was in a smock and everything. They says, you can't take him out. He says, "I didn't ask you. Where is he?" "I'm the one family. I'm his guardian. I'll take him out if I want to." They said, "Well, he's already prepped for the operation, so I don't care." So he brings him out. It's about 3 or 4 blocks down there, and he takes him out. Brother Graham takes his hat off, and he prays a simple prayer. So he turned around. I followed him away. And he said, "Tell him not to let him cut on him." He said, "He's healed." And so I turned around and I said, "Jerry, don't let him operate. He doesn't need it." He said, "No, wait a minute, are you sure?" I said, I'm sure, Jerry. I'm real sure. I said, "I'm sure enough that I can tell you right now, they won't find it when they look. Tell them to look first. Do it, approach it that way." So he went back, took him back in, and he said, "Whatever you do, no, I'm not authorizing this. I know I signed it. Tear it up. You have him examined by another doctor in the morning and get some new x-rays. Do not touch him." So the next morning, they couldn't find anything. So they turned him loose. So Jerry came up and he said, "You know, it works." He said, "It works. You know that?" I said, yeah, it does. And I said it thousands of times, Jerry. It works a lot, you know. He says, "Oh, it works, you know." So anyway, so Val came back and went to BYU. And one day he was in a library that the books could not be checked out. They had to be read right there and put right back under this glass case. And he was reading where a heretic got kicked out of the Mormon church, and there's a book called The Mormon Word of God, and on page 55 it says, In the last days, my servant William Branham will come down the West Coast, healing, preaching, and doing miracles in my name. And Val testified to me. It was in that book in the BYU library. And they kicked the man out for being a heretic. So, anyway, Val himself told me that. And by the way, Val is the superintendent of the largest coal mine in Utah today. He's very well, been very successful, and he's done a real good job. He's not an old dumb lineman, or, you know. He's done really well, and he's still healthy. That's a long time. One time, we were at this Strawberry Lodge, and as I told you this morning, it was my custom to have a client in, run the week, and then pay my bill. Well, my client was there about 3 days, and I ran up a bill, and I didn't pay him because I couldn't charge the guy because I told him to go home, so I didn't have any money. So I had zero money. I think I had $27, and I owed my bill there. So Lester comes around real discreet, and he says, hey, Tina says you didn't pay up on the last client. And I said, Tina's right. She's exactly right. He says, well, you're gonna collect off this guy? He called Brother Brennan, this guy, you know. He said, you're going to collect off this guy and pay him both? I says, that's not exactly, I knew I wasn't going to charge him, so I couldn't tell him I was going to do that. So I said, that's not exactly what I had in mind. I had in mind the next guy I'll pay all three. He says, no, that's not our deal. I want my money. In fact, you're going to pay it right now. So he sails in there to Tina. He says, print me up this. So she goes, gets me, tears off this receipt, and he gives it to me. And he puts it in my pocket. Hard. He stuffs it. He says, I want it today. I said, man, you've never done this before. I've never not paid you. And I said, man, we've been friends 4 years. I don't have it. He said, you collected, I know. And I didn't tell him anything. And I didn't tell him, it's his business, but I wasn't going to collect this time, you know, so I didn't say anything. So I thought, man, what am I going to do? And so about 10 minutes, Brother Brown comes up to me. And I'm watching these two Frenchmen that he had fixing flats. And I wanted to make sure there was really a nail in my tire because I didn't trust him too much. So I was checking it out, you know, because I had flats every day. And I always accused Lester of driving up that gravel road by struggling and throwing nails out because it was good business, you know. And I told him, like, if I ever get a brand new nail, I'm not paying for that flat, you know. So anyway, I was watching these Frenchmen fix a tire. Brother Van comes up and he said, let me help you out a little. I said, no, I don't need any money. He said, you know, this kind of adds up. And I said, no, sir, I don't need a dime. I'm fine. He looks at me and said, well, I'd sure like to help you. I said, no, sir, it's not necessary. Then he walked off, and Lester comes up and he said, did he pay you? I said, I didn't even pay you. He said, well, I heard him tell you he was going to. I said, then that's your business, Lester. You just pay, you just go run your restaurant, you know. So pretty soon, Brother Branham come back, and he said, hey, let me help you out. I said, oh, no, I don't need any. He said, well, I'd sure like to give you a little bit, at least on the expenses and all. I said, no, they're not very much, and I'll just get them. And I didn't want to tell him I didn't have any money. So he left, and pretty soon he comes back, and he stuffed a bunch of money in my pocket. Well, I hadn't even looked at the receipt, so I walked around the building there, and there was a little mechanic's bench, and I got that money out, and I got that receipt, and it was exactly to the penny what was written down, to the very penny. I mean, it's a... You know, the next guy that bought the Strawberry Lodge, he was a real nice young fellow. His name was Dennis Stutzman. And he kind of got me in a little bind because his mother inherited some money, and so she bought it. And so Lester told me, he said, I'm moving to Camp Verde, and we're going to put in a Western store. We're tired of this. And he said, we're selling out to this guy. His mother's got a lot of money. And he said, they don't even know how much work they're going to have with a motel and a restaurant and a service station and the lodge and everything. And said, we're glad to get out of it, but he said, they'll find out. So he said, I'll just tell them what kind of deal you got, and then maybe they'll just keep doing it. And finally, Lester did. I had to tell him that I never charged Brother Branham, and he got used to me waiting till the second guy. But anyway, Dennis, he found out that I hunted, so he started going on me. Well, we caught some lions, and he got all excited, and he got the fever, and that's a bad fever, you know. People don't need to be catching that, you know. But anyway, he got raging. He wanted him some dogs. And I said, oh, you don't want any dogs. You know, it's not as easy as you think it is. And it looks easy when you go out there and there's a lion up there and just a few dogs. But, you know, it's hard work. And they cost a lot of money. And yeah, I tried to discourage him. And the more I told him no, he wanted to do it. So he tried to buy some dogs from me. I said, no, I'm not going to sell any dogs. And what are you going to do? Your mother can't run this place, and if you go hunting, she's already mad at me because you're not being very responsible. Every time she hated to see me come, because if I came, he was in equal work. So she had it all to do. So I knew she hated me, and I knew, and I didn't. I thought, man, Dennis, she don't even like me to see, for me to come, and I come up here all the time. I said, you got me in a mess already. So, and sure enough, she was getting worse and worse, and she was getting hard to handle for me, you know. And I'm not very tall on the women anyway. And she was just getting all, you know, getting under my skin. And so she wasn't very nice, but I kind of understood, you know. But I just couldn't quite understand enough. And so Brother Branham came up, and I said, boy, I don't know if we'll get served tonight. So I told him the deal. I said, well, I don't know, she'll serve us last. She'll be kind of rude, and she'll be real terse with her remarks. So he says, and I said, yeah. I said, why? I said, well, the boy wants to go on, you know. He don't want to do his job. He wants to get irresponsible. And I don't know how to solve the deal. So we came in, and she come over to take the order. She stands like this. I'm not here. She goes, can I have your order? What do you want? You know, that's how Brother Bell looked at me. He said, ooh, cool. So she goes off and gets her stuff started. And she come back, and Brother Brown, he tapped my knee under the table. He says, evening, ma'am. She said, what do you do? All these guys he brings in are rich. What do you do? you know, and he said, well, I'm not rich, man. I'm a minister of the gospel. She looked at him, you know. She says, you know, I used to go to church. He said, you used to? That doesn't sound very good. She said, yeah, I'm ashamed of that. And so she sails off the kitchen and waits on a bunch of other people. Pretty soon she comes over there. And he said, where do you go to church? What town was that? She said, well, that was in Indiana. He said, well, I'm from Indiana. She said, no kid. Pretty soon she's sitting down with us, and then pretty soon she's crying. And she gave her heart to the Lord, and she was super nice to me. She was so nice. And then now every time I come up there, she tried to ask me, when's your friend coming back? And so just in 5 or 10 minutes, he had her just fine. And she was not too good. I mean, it wasn't going to get better for me, I can tell you that. Because I wasn't helping either. Anyway, just a little soft word turn up the way wrath, you know. And those other ones don't. They don't turn away wrath, you know. that we have to learn slow sometimes, you know. But anyway, what a wonderful example. I mean, and he was tender, and he was nice to her, you know. And he was thoughtful, and he showed empathy, and she knew it was genuine, you know. He really cared about her. He really cared about her predicament, you know. And it showed. You know, I was riding along with Brother Branham. I had done something wrong. I told you before, I wasn't professing to be a Christian. And I had done something bad. And I was wondering how I'm going to face Brother Branham when I see him again. It was troubling. I wanted to see him, but I was afraid. And I knew that he knew, and I didn't know what to do. So I'm driving down the road. If I've ever gone across from Page to Kanab, there's a place called Pariah Canyon. And I got so under conviction, I couldn't drive. And I had a huge burden that I couldn't bear. It was so heavy, I couldn't sit there. And I couldn't see to drive. I couldn't think. The pressure was so great, I didn't know what I was going to do, so I pulled over to the side of the road. And I had to get out. I got out of the car, truck. I walked around and I hung over the right-way fence, several feet over there. Brother Branham opened the car door, truck door, but he didn't say anything. Just opened it. And I sit there with this burden and guilt and conviction. And he said, "That wasn't your fault." He said, "That was a trap and you were weak. And the Lord will forgive you if you ask him." You know, I feel the same feelings again. They're so real to me. I feel it anew. I can't help it. He said, "If you ask, he'll lift that burden." Now just think, he said he'll take that burden. And I sat right there on that fence. And I talked to the Lord about it, and I confessed it out loud. And I asked him to forgive me, and just a ton of weight. And I walked around, got in the truck, and I drove on. And he talked to me about 5 or 10 minutes about it. And he just knew how to deal with every situation that you came to. And he did it so gentlemanly and so soft and so thoughtful and tender. And yet he could be stern, you know, or yet he could be gentle. But he didn't tell me how rotten I was. And he didn't beat me up about it. I was already hurt. I already knew. And sometimes I wonder if we aren't harsh on each other when we each know when we're wrong, and we know when we're bad, and our children know when they're bad, and we don't have to just keep on and keep on hammering on them. If we could be like that to our children and be more understanding and more and then show that love and not spite, you know. And I thought, you know, he could have railed on me and I would have had to stand there and take it because it would have been right. But he didn't do it that way. So I just wanted to tell you, I mean, I wasn't proud of what I did or anything, but I've been, you know, made a lot of mistakes in my life, and that was one of them. And anyway, it meant a lot to me, the way he dealt with it. It meant a lot to me. One day I want to tell you about one of the most enjoyable days I ever remember in my life. It seemed like it was so simple and nothing was exciting, and I enjoyed it so much. What a privilege. And if I tell you, you're going to be envious of this. You're going to be envious because it was a wonderful thing. We had gone to Sunset, just he and I, and we were camped out in the wash, and he couldn't go up by the rock in his station wagon, but he had driven from Tucson, and he had a sleeping bag in it, and we went ahead and parked it when it got rough and got in my truck, and he found it. Well, I don't know if he had found it. He told me about a bobcat we were going to find, and I don't know if he'd found it earlier or if he just knew it was there. He never knew, you know. But we went up there and we trailed this bobcat and we put it in a tree. And we were talking and making too much noise. Well, who am I to tell him we shouldn't talk and we should shut up and slip up quietly? I didn't ever tell him that, you know. I wasn't my place to tell him. You got to remember, I was a kid, you know, I was young. I was a young man. And I was bit of all things that I can say, of my many mistakes I did make. One I didn't make. And I've been happy. I was very respectful. At least I was, I had reverence for it. Very. And I was careful about what I said and what I did, because you couldn't help it with the feeling you felt. And I can't describe that, but you had an awe. There was a presence there, an aura that I can't describe, that you knew was very real. I'm not capable of putting it into words, but there was an imminence of I can't describe, but it caused you to reverence it. You knew not to abuse it or be harsh, if I may say. And so we were going up there, and I thought perhaps we were making a little less noise, but there's a lot of bobcats in the world, and so I didn't say anything. It jumped out, and some of you that have ever been to Sunset up there, Sunset Wash goes up there, and it has red, big red walls, and this tree, it was a ironwood tree, grew up, and the cat jumped out on the ledge and took off. Well, we had to walk a long ways to get the dogs around because the dogs couldn't climb the ledge. We didn't hurry. We just talked. And we took the dogs around and gone back up there and started trailing this cat again. By that time, it took us an hour or so. This cat track was a little old and they had to work it pretty hard. And so they're trailing and it came up a real big sun thunderstorm. And it rained our track out because the cat track was pretty sensitive, you know, a small foot, doesn't have a lot of sand in it. The dogs were having to work it. It was just desert old dry sand anyway, and sagebrush. So there wasn't a lot to hold us in. So when it rained, I knew we had lost the cat. And I said, we might as well go back to the rig and have lunch with them. They're not going to find that cat again. And if we'll lose it, you know, it got washed out. He said, yeah, no doubt it did. So we went back. And it just started like that. We went back to the truck, and he said, well, let's go down to the station wagon. I got a sleeping bag in there. We'll just stretch out and get dry, and I got something I want to tell you. So we went down there. I went back to the truck, put the dogs in the truck, and we drove down to the station wagon. As most of you know, the Tabernacle body went forward every 3 or 4 years, and it was usually black. And he drove those Ford station wagons. And this one was the same, black. And we stretched out on the sleeping bag. And I probably hadn't, you know, well, I know I hadn't cried any. I hadn't ever wet an eye, probably in years. And I was too hard, and I was crusty and everything. And I can tell you that Brother Branham told me his life story for 3.5 hours. And I cried from the beginning to the end. I don't know how to tell you how wonderful it was, because I've heard it on tape, I've read the books, and I've never heard it all put together like this. I heard every, and oh, it was so such a delight. I just loved it. I don't know how he had the patience to do that for me, but it's been one of the highlights. And it was, you know, it's all I can tell you, that it was just wonderful to me. It was a privilege, and I just loved it. And I didn't know most of it. I hadn't read all the things I've read now. At that point in time, I only had a dozen tapes and a few books, you know. And so I had no way of knowing. And most of that I didn't know, and I was touched by it. And then I really saw the suffering that he went through and the pain that built that character, you know. And sometimes Brother Jim, Ed, and I were talking today, you know. It's a funny thing, but there are some of us that look back and thank the Lord for that pain and those hardships we go through. They're not fun to go through, but oh, what do they, there's something they do to you that you don't get any other way. And, you know, he had more than any of us, but we each in our own way have our burdens and our trials, and we have our things that we battle. But every one of them are for a reason, and every one of them are good for you, whether you like it or not. And I can truly say I thank the Lord for all of my hard battles that I've gone through, because I consider them a blessing to me. And if they changed my life in any way, or added to it, and anyway, I wanted to just, I didn't know how to tell you how much I enjoyed that day, but it was just priceless to me. And he said something to me. Bear in mind now, he would talk very little about the spiritual things, but he broke quite a few in. But he'd be interspersed with a lot of stories and a lot of hunting. But then he would tell me things. And we were driving along, I think it was about Black Canyon City. And he said, you know, I guess you've heard about that mess up in Canada that they're baptizing in my name. I said, no, I didn't hear about that. I said, you know, I don't get around in those circles, you know. He said, it's really hurting my ministry, and I'm going to have to get up there and straighten that out. And I'm saying, man, I'm just sitting there in my mind thinking, baptizing in his name. I hadn't heard about it, see. And he says, but you know what? They're not as far off as you think they are. And I said, whoa, what do I think they are? You know, I thought they were pretty far off, you know. Anyway, it made me think a lot. And it's made me look at a lot of tapes a lot differently. But anyway, yeah, he told me they weren't as bad as I thought they were. So I want to talk to you a minute about a promise. Sometimes we make promises, and I'm not too sure we take them serious enough. Let me tell you about a promise I made and what it cost me. And I didn't think too much about it. And I think I was innocent of it, of what the results. I did not plan to break the promise. I honestly do, and I'll tell you the circumstance. Brother Brandon had told me about a large lion, and we hadn't caught it yet. And he had seen it in a vision. And so one day I had an old couple booked for clients. And this old gentleman, he was a nice old man, and he says, he's about my age now. And I thought he was ready for the grave, you know. But anyway, he was old, you know. I was a kid. He was, you know, had gray hair and all that stuff. And not much of that. And his wife was pretty old. And he went and booked to take some pictures of the lion. I said, man, I'm your hoss. I'm the guy. Yeah, I can do it. I said, I'll catch you some lion. We'll take a lot of pictures. Well, I thought in my mind I'd probably be taking most of them myself, but I could maybe get them to some of them. So I booked them just like a hunt. I like those better anyway. I didn't have to kill the lion. So I went up to Promontory Lookout. We set up the camp trailer up on the rim. And some of you know where it is. And I had a real nice, pleasant morning that day, and my dogs trailed a lion down back east and dropped under the rim, got up and a bunch of stuff, and finally caught this nice lion, a beautiful lion, and someone down there went gone. Drove as close as I could, and I had these teeter-year-old people, you know, one on each arm, and I take them down there, and they take a bunch of pictures, and the lion jumped, I jumped it out, so it get in another tree so we can get some more pictures. So I think I got five or six trees for him that day. So I thought, you know, that lion might be the one in the vision. So I went, had him pay me, and took him home. They said, well, we thought we were going to stay here 5 days. I said, well, you've hired me for pictures, and you've got your pictures, and I'll have another hunter here in the morning. I want to call Brother Brown and see if I can get that lion again. So I went down for the dog on it to stay all night. I took Boots down there and I put him on it. And I knew he'd hold him up in the tree all night. So I went back and called Brother Brad. I said, hey, you know, I don't know if that's it or not. He said, no, that's not it. He said, did it have a bunch of scars on it? I said, no, sir. Yeah, I said, it was real clean. He said, that wasn't it. He said, okay, thank you. So I had to go get my dog. And he was a long ways. So, when I saw Brother Man next time, I said, well, I'll tell you what. I was over at Promontory Canyon, which is another canyon west, and I think I really did get this lion this time. I said, it was bigger than that one, had scars. He said, well, I don't know. He said, I don't know. So I said, okay, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll promise you I won't kill it. Because usually your lion, I remember a good lion, you take your next paying guy, and that one, he's history, you know. I said, I promise you I won't go to Promontory Canyon. He said, well, that's fine. He said, but, you know, you don't have to. I said, no, I'll just let him, just in case it's him, I won't go there. So, that was about 3 months later, and I was running a bear way away from there. In some way or another, this bear got into Promontory Canyon, and I got to the lip of it, and I went, oh, I'm not supposed to be here. And I got scared. I said, oh, I promised I wouldn't do this. And a drunk woman killed every one of my dogs on a point at random. They ran across the road chasing the bear, and she got, I don't know how you can get all of them, but she got them all. It's if I, how do you do it? You know, you can get one or two. She got them all. She got all four of them. Killed all of my dogs. And just because I went where I was supposed to be, I should not have been there. And I knew it. I knew when I got there, I was scared. When I got to the lip of it, I thought, I promised the prophet I would not go here. And I did. And I got my dogs killed. And I'll tell you something, I grieved over it too. And it took me a long time to train up some more dogs. It takes a long time, a lot of work. But I took that promise too lightly, and I wasn't paying attention. I let those dogs out too close to that canyon. You know, bears can go a long ways, and they did, it did, it looked like to it. Anyway, I got all my dogs killed with that drunk. And she was down there crying, I felt sorry for her. She said, I killed your dogs, I know. And I see them, I just want my collars back, you know. And so she says, well, I didn't mean, I said, well, I didn't tell her what her fault, you know, was mine, you know. I didn't get mad at her, what could I do, you know. She wasn't supposed to be driving, but I wasn't supposed to be there either, you know. One time, little grandma got a big, nice lion up by, it was halfway between Camp Lurie and, the power plant down there, somewhere or another, between Strawberry and Camp Lurie. On my memory, I've been hunting in Arizona for 20 years, and some of those places get a little bit dim, but I can't remember that. Captain Canyon, that's where it was, Captain Canyon. We caught a real nice lion. And so we didn't measure it. So I scanned it, put it in the freezer. So the next day, these hunters came in, and they had this pretty nice lion. And they measured it in front of us. And it was 9'4". You know, I remember that, it was big. But he said, he looked at me and he said, it's as big as ours. I says, no, sir. He said, I was thinking the same thing. I said, ours was a little bigger. He says, when they leave, let's measure ours. I said, all right. He says, I think ours is about 9'8". And that's what it was. When I put the tape on it was 9'8". And I thought, whoa, wait a second, ours is about 9'8". Well, how could you know it was? Why did it up? You know, man. We didn't think about how long it was, you know? Yeah, I think it's about 9'8". And that's exactly what it was. And that impressed me. It probably did. One day, another really fun day, it seems like it was boring. If I told you that we were going to sort guns in the duplex, sorting all of his guns to decide which ones were going to go in the new den, it didn't sound very exciting. It was exciting. It was really fun. And I mean, he told me the story of every one of his guns. And of course, I like that. I mean, I like it. He knew every one of them who gave them to him. He said, I didn't buy any. Everyone was a gift. And now listen carefully to this. This is impressive. He says, so we're in the duplex. You remember when he entered the duplex before he moved in when they were building the den? So we have these guns all there. He's gonna put this one in here and he tells me all these stories. So he says, well, we're working hard. Let's go to lunch. So we went down to Mexican food in Tucson somewhere. I can't remember where. It didn't matter. But we went down at 8, and on the way down, now listen to me. He says, you know, most of those guns are just like UPS would pull up and the guy would get out and hand me Seiko Finbear 270 from Sweden, and it would, I mean Finland, from Finland, and he said, and it would be from a brother who loves you, and it would be anonymous. And he said, most of them like that, sort of like that. So we went on at 8, and we came back, and he said, what was that pulled up in front? Well, you couldn't hear what pulled up in front. We were in the back, you know. I said, I don't know. I'll go out and look. The UPS guy gets out, and he brings me a box that's obviously a rifle, and he says, Bill Branham. I said, yes, sir. I'll sign for it. He said, we opened it up, it was a Seiko Finbear 270, and it was anonymously signed from a brother in Finland. He told me that 3 hours before, 3.5 hours before it got delivered, exact to the description. It was even UPS. I mean, it was amazing. I couldn't believe it. I sat there. I couldn't wait to get it open. I knew it was. I knew it was going to be one. I knew, and he didn't have any. He didn't have any of those in there. I mean, it was unbelievable to me. I was exhilarated, you know. I couldn't wait. And he looked at me and he said, "They think I don't know who's in it." So, I know how he confused me one day. I mean, he confused me. You know, I'm not even trying to figure out mysteries or anything, and I don't know about anything. I like stuff simple, you know. And he starts telling me, give me a walk down Sunset. And the rocks were fresh. The rocks were fresh. And he showed them to me. They'd just come down. And, oh, man, destruction. Those trees were leveled off. And we're walking down there, and I knew how that had to sound loud. I saw where it was torn off, and all these tri-colored rocks from this big to this big were all over the place, like a pyramid. It was unbelievable. And I'm just almost speechless anyway. And he takes a little rock, and he throws it up, and he said, talking about this dragon whipping its tail and causing destruction, and I was all confused, and so I didn't know what to do. I just left it alone, you know, and I went to back the dragon's tail and stuff. So, you know, I don't know, I felt pretty ignorant, you know, which I was. And so, anyway, the next day, I got on a Greyhound bus. I don't remember where I was going. But I went on this Greyhound bus, and there was a paper sitting there. And I picked it up, and that Alaska, man, it was all in the headlines and pictures and big devastation. I knew where the dragon whipped its tail now. All of a sudden, I knew, I figured that out, you know. I wasn't near as dumb as I was the day before. I couldn't believe it. You see, he told me that little rock started, and I couldn't believe it, you know. I mean, in my mind, it just doesn't seem right that you can start an earthquake throwing a little rock about that big, you know. And he knew it was coming. I didn't have a clue, you know. I was just shocked, so I couldn't hardly wait to ask him. I already knew. I already knew, but I had to ask him anyway to make sure I wasn't off on some fairy tale, you know. He just rocked his head, you know. That kind of stuff it affects you. You never get away. You never lose remembrance of that, you know. And it was different, I can tell you right now. Because I was having trouble putting all that together. You know, I was telling you about the dog this morning that he told me that wasn't my best dog. His name was Eli, my one he liked. And he was right, and as I got to studying, it didn't take very long until I realized he was quite a bit better. And anyway, he told me not to sell the dog. And I said, well, because some lion hunters, they, you know, they get, it's kind of a poor way to make a living, and sometimes you get offered a lot of money for those dogs, and you have a temptation to sell it. Oh, you get the fat, you know, you get attached to them. But then, too, you got to eat. Sometimes you sell them, you know. You don't want to, but, you know, like nowadays, they're $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, you know. So you get one that's, and you get a little bit broke, you might part with one, you know. Just patting and say, well, that's been nice, you know. But anyway, I promised him I wouldn't sell the dog. And they weren't that high at that time. But anyway, I told him no, I wouldn't sell him. And I really liked the dog a lot. And I got more attached and more attached, and he became by far my best dog. And I don't know, I'm still training with that other dog, and the other dog's still okay. He was decent, but I just haven't sorted it out, the other man pointed it out. But I want to tell you something, and I'm not one, I think that the term Brother Graham uses is I'm not given to illusions, but I want to tell you what happened to this dog. Well, I don't know what happened to the dog, but I'll tell you the story. He was getting old, and I would go see him every day, and I was living out of Sholo about 40 miles at the time. I was hunting Fort Apache, and the old dog was too old to go, and I just kept him around out of sentiment. He was getting kind of arthritic, and he was filmy-eyed and stuff, but I didn't even make him work. I mean, he just had a free ride, you know. And so every day I'd go to him first, see if he died, because it'd be cold, you know. And so we got a fresh blanket of snow over everything about midnight. I knew it had snowed about midnight, because if it snows early, a lion hunter loves it. But if it snows at daylight, it messes you up, because lions won't be walking. So those early snows are what you like. And so I always get up several times and see if it's what time to quit and so on. So it quit about midnight. I went over, and Eli, there was he hadn't come out. He didn't come out of his box. There was no tracks. And the chain was going in and up, and I had a piece of carpeting over the door. And the chain went in, there was no tracks. So I fed and watered all my dogs and was going to go ahead and get ready to leave. And I yelled at Eli, and he didn't come out. I went over there, and he was gone. And there was no tracks. And he just was gone. And I never knew really what happened, but he never died. And if he had left, I wouldn't see the tracks. And he didn't leave, and he wasn't there, and he never showed up for a couple of years. It was just funny, he just left, you know. He was just gone one day. So I didn't have to bury that dog. But I kept him until he was old. One day, the gentleman I mentioned, some of you may know him or may not, that I was dove hunting with, and that had told me he wasn't going to quit dove hunting. And he knew me pretty well, and he knew I wasn't a Christian. And one day he was sitting in the Ramada, down about the first third of the seats, and he called my name that day, and he called me Brother Dawson. And I'll be honest with you, it hurt my conscience when I heard him say that. I'll tell you that it kind of bothered me. So a purpose in my heart, I was going to go to him and tell him not to call me that anymore. So Bob, I didn't know that Bob had the same thought. And he told me later what he thought, because I didn't know this happened. I heard Brother Branham say it, and I didn't know what he meant. Bob said, Brother Dawson, you don't know him like I do. That's what he told me he thought. Brother Branham stopped, pointed his finger at him, and he said, I caught that. He came running up to me after church, and he said, forgive me. I said, for what? You don't know me. He said, man, I thought, yeah, I do. You forgive me. When he called you brother, I was critical in my heart. And he pointed at me, real stern, and told me outside, caught that. And I said, well, you don't have to worry about me. I think you're right. I'm not a very good brother. So you didn't offend me. He said, well, I want you to forgive me. I said, fine. So when Brother Branham, I saw him, I don't remember how soon before I saw him again, a few days, probably, or a month, 2 weeks, I don't know. Whenever he called me again, and we went, I said, you know, we were sitting down. He said, what's bothering you? I said, well, I'll tell you what's bothering me over there. You called me brother. He said, well, Dawson, don't you tell me who to call brother. So I did. And then Bob, you know, I didn't tell you the rest. He came up to me and he said, well, I want you to forgive me, and I've been thinking, I don't think I better shoot any more of those doves. I said, that's probably a good deal. That was 2 years later. He said, I think I'm not going to shoot any more of those doves. So anyway, he quit. Yeah. One, let me tell you about this truck I had, a brand new Chevy truck. I think it was a 65. It was really a nice truck, you know, V8 and 4-speed and everything. So Brother Brown told me, looking for him a saguaro for the front of the den, the Circle Drive. I said, I find them all the time that we have to get rid of, and because they were starting to get a little sticky about just taking them anywhere. I said, I'll find you one. So they were building a school over at the little town of the Kennecott Copper owns it over there by Ray. I forgot the name. It starts with an S. Not Superior, but down by Ray. Anyway, the next little town. And they were building a school in there, and I was doing some dozer work, and it was a beautiful saguaro. A mist, a big, and I said, oh, that's got to go to Brother Brown. So I got this dozer, and I dug up and got under it. And if you know, do it just right, you lay them over real soft. If you take the root ball and take some more dirt, and I laid it over real tender. And the only thing, it was on the desert. And real bad rocks. I mean, I said, oh, you guys, come on, let's get me a truck to it. And no, I said, well, I'll do it. So I just hooked onto that trailer with my brand new truck. It was about a week old, and I took it up to that saguaro, and I took the dozer to the side and shoved this saguaro on this big trailer. Well, I shoved my truck into a big old rock, and it's brand new. It was on the right door. And I would never fix it because I liked it. Because I knew what I was doing when I did it. I kept that truck until it was old, and I never fixed the door. And my mother fussed at me all the time. When are you going to do it? I said, I'm never going to fix it. But anyway, I could have bought one from the nursery because it was so heavy it broke all the tires on my trailer. I had to buy all new tires. And if I had fixed my truck and bought new tires, I could have just bought one. You know, but anyway, it's up there in front of his house. And I never fixed that car. You know, I want to read some of these things that about being with, how are we on time? We are, right? So, anyway, you know, he asked me several times some real pointed personal questions. And I'll be quite frank, I would rather not answer. I really wouldn't. But one thing I did, looking in the eye and told him exactly the right answer, because I knew better than not to. And I didn't always know why he asked me. Sometimes I wondered if he just asked me if I was going to answer. It would be embarrassing. And answer him straight. And I was always thankful for that, but, you know, I don't know exactly why he did. Because some of them would have been a lot easier not to answer, that's just truth. I would have rather not. But I did every time, and I'm glad I did. But, you know what, I don't know how to describe some of the things that how he was, but I'll just put some notes here that he had a very good sense of humor. Now he did. A lot of people might not think, but he did like to laugh, and he did laugh a lot. Once he got rested from the stress of the knees, the first couple of days he wound up pretty good, and he didn't, of course. But as soon as he got relaxed, he did like to laugh. He had a very good sense of humor, and he had a lot of funny stories. And he had black heart. He liked to belly laugh, you know. And, of course, he didn't have to worry about me helping, you know. And so he was really a lot of fun. And several things that I noticed, you know, he was helpful. He was very helpful. I don't care what I was doing. I had never been around anybody, especially preachers, that help you. You know, they want to be waited on, you know, and they want somebody to coddle them. You know? I mean, he worked hard. I mean, he would do chores. He would do things that embarrassed me. He'd carry water for my dog. I mean, he would drag up wood to the campfire. I mean, you know, very helpful. I mean, he just did part of the chores. When you were out there camping, he did half the work, and at least, and he did it very not grudgingly, you know, freely, and he was very helpful. And that struck me. I watched a lot of people. I never, of course, clients, they pay me to do it. I'm not expecting, don't get me wrong, you don't expect clients to do it. That's not what they're out there for. But I'm talking about when you take brothers, you know, and they're not even paying. You know, they're still letting you help them out, you know. And I was very striking to me about how helpful that brother Brennan was, and very, very thoughtful of those types of things. And he seemed to be always at the right place at the right time. And that was striking to me on many, many, many occasions, you know. And he wasn't too big to do something menial. I mean, that's what I loved, that he was, in my opinion, he was big enough to do something menial, you know. But he was very respectful of women, even unsaved women. He was careful. He doffed his hat. He took his hat off. He wouldn't have his hat on talking to a woman. He would take it off. And he tried to be respectful. And that was a lot of the older people remember when that was common. He would stand up when a woman came in the room. He didn't just sit and let her hunt a seat. He was very respectful. And, you know, they didn't have to be sisters either. He was just there. That was one thing that I noticed. He was always kind and respectful to women. The reason I, you know, the reason I said it, but a lot of people think in the message that you got to be a little bit tough. You got to be a little tough with the woman, you know. Some people think that, and that, you know, there's nothing further from the truth, you know. But anyway, he didn't show us that example, you know. And he was always a gentleman. I don't care who he was, in what case, he was always, I considered him a consummate gentleman at all times. And here he was uneducated, but he had very educated actions. He had a lot of class because he was a gentleman. He was kind and considerate. And sometimes he could be stern, but the sternness was in very serious matters. He was unyielding. He was unyielding in serious matters. I mean, there was no, you know, he had courage to speak his mind. Of course, that's not a question. We know that. But he wasn't pushy with it, but he could be stern, and he wasn't jovial. He knew when to laugh, and he knew when to be stern. And he didn't mix them. That's what I guess I'm trying to say. There were times that he didn't do the hard laughing because he was in a serious subject. He was funny, and he imitated people pretty good. You know, some people he could imitate real good, and he had voices and the way they talk. He could imitate Welch Evans perfect, you know. I mean, he could talk. Talk a little southern if he wanted to, and it's pretty funny. But he did cut up quite a bit, and he didn't mind. In fact, hold on, once in a while, you know, one time I remember this. In fact, some brothers were all camped at Sunset. It was Javelina season, and you know, it got out of hand pretty soon. There's 60, 80, 90 guys down there, and it just messed it up. But anyway, they found out where he was camping, so a bunch of people showed up for him. I remember David Woods. Well, you know, I didn't get concerned about David Woods. For those who don't know that, you hear him talk about his best friend, Ben Woods. Well, David's a son that got healed with a polio, but David's a big lad, you know, now. But at that time, he was a youngster, and he really liked to pull jokes. Well, he did a bunch of things, Brother Branham, and the brothers got offended. And they didn't realize that's his next door neighbor. He grew up with him, and he could pull those tricks that they would or not do and get by with it, you know, like putting lizards in his bed and short cheating his bed and all that stuff. He did that kind of stuff and just laughed, and they were offended by it. But see, he had enough humor that it didn't. He wasn't offended by it. And then, you know, he said, David, I'll get you back. And David says, oh, man, I ain't worried. You know, I don't know. Because he told himself, I'm going to get you back for those tricks. But he took it very good, you know. And I want to say this about him that I noticed in every occasion. He always left some sort of testimony with a stranger. And he told me once, he said, now, that woman, the only thing I could tell her is that I was a minister, because she wouldn't let me tell her anything else. But yet, he told me this way. He said, as long as you don't feel the rejection, you can go. When they start pushing you back or rejecting it, then you leave it alone, and that's as far as you can go. He said, but as long as they're receiving it, you can go as long as they'll let you go. And that was real important to me, because sometimes we don't know what to do in witnessing to people. And are you seeing people abuse that so badly? They just hammer them, and they want to save them, you know, and they want to show them. They want it for them so bad, and the people don't even want. And he told me once, he said, you can't help people if they don't know they need help. And so he said sometimes, but I did notice that no matter how he left a stranger, there was some sort of witness there. If it was nothing but I am a minister, or sometimes the Lord allows me to see things, or sometimes people are healed in my meetings, we'd like to invite you out, that sort of thing. And then some of them that it just might be a little reprimand in their life. And I'd seen him do that, and he got by with it. He knew when to do it and when that. How, but that was striking to me, that he did try to witness in some form every time. And that was a common thing. I pretty much saw, and I think I have an instance in here in my notes about that, because I was almost worried, about some real hard gentlemen that I knew. Okay, here it is. I'm going to read this so I wrote it out. Well, once he testified to a game biologist, this was in Utah, and a game warden and a government hunter. And they had told Jerry they didn't like creatures, and they probably wasn't going to like this guy. And so he told me, he said, you go up front with the dogs. I've got something I want to tell these guys. I says, okay. So I moved up front. And he's telling me, he's talking to these guys. And I couldn't hear it because I did what he asked me to do. But I looked back and they were all three crying. And he told me later that he led them to the Lord. I never saw two of them again. But the biologist, and they were doing a turkey transplant, and I never saw them again because they were guys from somewhere else. He said, I led them to the Lord. And I did see all of them crying, and they all were kneeling in the trail. I didn't get to hear any of it, but he didn't want me to embarrass them. And so I went right on like he told me to do. I did what he told me, because that he was a reason, or he wouldn't let me be there. And so, you know, I was worried that they were going to be nasty to me, because they told Jerry they don't like creatures, you see what I mean? And they said, they had already made up their mind. Jerry said, no, you've got to hear this guy, he's different than any you ever saw. So Jerry, who then told me not to bring a preacher around, is telling he's going out and getting converts, you know? The Jack one, you know? Anyway. And then Jerry, you know, right after that, I didn't see the other guys, and Jerry, he told me, he said, you know, he said, Bill, that was his brother-in-law, the biologist was his brother-in-law, by the way, and he said, you know, he's always asking for Bill. He said, can you give me his address? He wants to talk to him again. I said, you bet, I will. So I got him the Jeffersonville address. But anyway, he told me numerous times that he had asked for it. And then Jerry told me several times after the accident that he missed Bill. Told me that several times. So I really missed your friend Bill. And sometimes we don't know how deep it ran, you know. Sometimes it looks like it's frivolous. Sometimes it's, you don't think it's sinking in. It may have a seed planted, you know. I'm going to just give you one more, and then I'm going to leave you with this one. And because this one was different than anything I'd ever encountered with him, and was somewhat surprising. Jerry and I, this government hunter, he and I had a little training device that we used to train lion hound pups. We had captured a live lion, and we kept it in a milk barn way out in the country because it's illegal to have them, and it's illegal to do what we were doing, but we could really train lion dogs. We would take this lion and had a rebar front on it, and I could pull the rope and let our pups watch this lion run off, then we'd dump our pups out and they'd chase this lion till he treed, and then we would tie our pups up. I'd get up there and jerk this line out and go to another tree and turn him loose and let him train him again. Then we'd go tie him up again, take him back home. Well, we'd been doing that, we didn't tell anybody. It was just our solemn secret because we didn't want the other line hunters knowing we had it because they'd be wanting that. And then pretty soon they'd tell somebody else, their brother-in-law, and pretty soon you're in trouble. So we had a pact. Nobody knows, okay? Nobody knows our secret. So I'm riding along in the pickup with Brother Branham, and he gets this little funny look on his face, and he says, you know, I'm going to tell you about a friend of mine, how he trains lion dogs. And he describes our setup to a T, and he said, it's got this little rebar on it, and they pull the rope. He said, it works real good, you might want to try it.
Thank you, Brother Dawson. That's the life of Christ that you witnessed with the mighty man of God in our day. That's the life I want to emanate. And we can all start by respecting one another more, especially the household of faith and everyone. So everything Brother Dawson said is true. So many times he'd take his hat off. Especially if the woman was with him. Many times he's even pulled his hat off when he talked to me. And he'd take his hat off. And, I didn't know what he was doing then, but if you ever been riding along and you feel the presence of the Lord, that's the first thing you do. Many times now I pull my hat off when I feel that presence of the Lord laid on the dash and different things like that. And I finally, as I got older, I figured what Brother Brown was doing. He was at presence of the Lord was coming. He was respecting it by taking his hat off. And like when we walk through the sanctuary, what do? We pull our hats off to respect the Lord and different things like that. So we can never go wrong respecting and loving one another. And that quote that I read to the church, how God is so patient with us not to call our failures out and deal so patiently with us. And he says he knows how to encourage us in the right things and discourage us in the wrong things. And he said, this is the way to handle the church and the way to handle our families. And what wisdom of God has been left us in the message of the hour. And what Brother Dawson said about humor, Brother Brown loved humor. Because when we hunted with him, he had us laughing and rolling, and he could imitate anybody if he wanted to talk like that. And then when he got all done, he said, Brother, he says, God loves humor. He said, he hates smut. And so he was a real man's man, a real godly man. And I thank God for these living testimonies that we have. And I see that in his people today. I see that same characteristic of Christ in the bride today. And so I'm happy Brother Gossett came to be with us. I believe his steps were instructive of the Lord. And it's so encouraging to have someone come and back up everything that you've ever experienced from another angle, another direction, that it was all the same God. And I can truly say, all the times that I was with Brother Brown, the thoughts never entered my mind that he was God. The thoughts crossed me. I am so close to God. I feel so close to God. I'm in a presence that I've never been in before. And when I left him, he felt so much closer to Jesus Christ. He didn't feel like he was Brother Brown's bosom buddy. But you felt close to Jesus Christ. And that's what we need more in our lives, each one of us. Every time we leave somebody, leave them feeling like they're closer to Christ than they've ever been. And so we thank God for this example that we've had in this day and age. And that same spirit, the bride, we'll see, the prophet, the bride, and the spirit will all be saying the same thing, having the same nature, and everything. So I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it immensely. It's just been, it's like sad, rubbed over your life. And so I like Donald come and lead us in a song. Remember Brother Dawson, his family, and what he does. Now you've got a real friend that you can pray for, and he can pray for all of us, okay? So Donald, you just come lead us in some songs, and then we'll close. God bless you. Thank you for being so lovely and patient. And but how could you not enjoy it? Amen.
Oh, my brother, do you know the Savior who is one?
Meni je svjedočanstvo jako lijepo, jel' tako? I ako vidite koliko puta se spominju slučajevi sa otkrivanjem tajni srca. Ponekad ljudi ili neki ljudi slušaju propovijed Brata Branhama i onda kad dođe taj dio otkrivanja tajni srca, to ugase ili to izbace ili kad je molitva za bolesne ili slično, jer toliko smo toliko na neki način se naslušali ili navikli na to ili malo uzmemo zdravo za gotovo, ali to je ono što je Bog izabrao kao zadnji znak ili kao najveći znak da živimo u vrijeme preobraženja tijela. Kad je Abraham bio tamo, znamo priču o Abrahamu i Sari, onaj zadnji znak što je Bog izabrao bilo je otkrivanje tajne srca koje su bile u Sarinom srcu tamo iza njega, ali tako. I to je bio posljednji znak toj generaciji da dolazi uništenje Sodome i da će njihovo tijelo biti pomlađeno i da će dobiti obećanog sina. Tako da ovo otkrivanje tajnih srca koje slušamo u propovjedima, to je nešto što je bilo non stop pratilo prorokovu službu, da najavi, jel tako, da će doći onaj kombi poštanski i donijeti poklon od neki od brata iz Finske, baš tu puško, jel tako, ili koliko je puma dugačka ili slične stvari i takve detalje koje mu je Bog otkrivao, ili kad bi vidio nešto što čovjek misli, i to vidimo da zaista, to je ono što čini razliku između ove poruke i drugih denominacijskih učenja, jel tako. Ono što mi je bio jako dobar primjer, da tu Branham nije glumio neku elitu, jel tako. Pa on je nosio vodu za pse, ili šta mu, bukao drva za vatu, jel tako. Kaže, ja nisam očekivao to od njega, ali nije bio kao drugi propovjednici. I ono što brat Dawson kaže, nije bio kao i neka druga braća, on bi vodio i braću u lova, ali kaže, braća žele da ih se služi, a on je bio sluga. Ne zato što veličamo čovjeka, nego zato što vidimo primjer koji je Bog postavio. Kad ljudi čitaju Bibliju i kad vide šta je Isus radio, to je velika stvar. Ali Isus je bio bezgrešno začet, tako, rođen direktno od Boga, nije zaobišao teofaniju i slično, tako, došao je na zemlju kao Bog u tijelu. I sve ono što čitamo i čemu se divimo, to je velika stvar. Ali na neki način, kad vidite da Bog napravi to isto kroz griješnika, to je još veće čudo. Kad Bog uzme i napravi to isto kroz griješnika, Brat Branham je bio griješnik i mi smo griješnici, jel tako? I onda Bog napravi ono o čemu čitamo u evanđeljima kroz griješnika. Velika stvar je da je on to napravio kroz Krista, bezgrešno začetog, jel tako, i rođenog bez ikakvog grijeha, ali da to isto napravi kroz griješnika, to je stvarno uspjeh. Tako, to je stvarno veliko dostignuće i to je ono što Bog radi kroz nas. I ono što brat kaže na kraju, iste ove osobine on vidi u nevjesti. Tako, vi ste te stvari u kojima slušamo ovdje, vidite u vjernicima. Kad gledate Dawsona, tu prirodu o kojoj on priča kao proroku, vi osjetite da je i on takav čovjek. Tako. Vidite da je to iskreno, vidite da je i on jednostavan vjernik, tako, koji ima svoje, tako, ljudskosti i sve skupa, ali vidite šta je Bog napravio u njegovom životu. Isto tako kad se okrenete oko sebe, možete vidjeti u vjernicima iste te osobine koje vidite, koje čitate u Bibliji, koje čitate u poruci i nalazite u nevjesti danas. I ono što ljudi često imaju krivi dojam, tako kad slušaju propovjedi, neko može uzeti doktrinu i može sad uzeti sve stihove gdje je prorok govorio, ne znam, o ženama na neki malo grublji način i onda napraviti neku doktrinu ili neku legalizam neki ili nešto, a vidite kakav je čovjek zaista bio, jel tako, kažu je da bi ustao kad svakoj ženi, čak i kad griješnica uđe, jel tako, ili nevjernica, on bi je dao da sjedne, skinuo šešir i tako dalje. Vidite da one riječi, ako uzmete samo riječi bez duha, bilo sa Biblijom, uzmete riječi bez duha, napravit ćete katoličku crkvu, tako, ili neku denominacijsku crkvu, a uzmete riječi duh, Bog će proizvesti ovaj život nevjestu. Isto tako uzmete poruku i vadite riječi bez duha. Bez duha te poruke, efekt je smrt. A uzmete riječi duh, daje život. Tako. I Isus je to rekao, da riječi koje sam vam ja rekao su duh i život. Tako da, ova priča, ova svjedočanstva nam daju malo osjećaja da osjetimo duh tog čovjeka ili duh koji je bio na tom čovjeku, to ilijino pomazanje koje je onda prešlo na nevjestu, da vidimo da kakva karakter, kakva priroda, što je ono iza svega toga i onda daje malo širu sliku. I neke svjedočanstva i neke priče koje ste čitali u poruci, kad čujete malo širu sliku, dobiju na težini, dobiju dublje značenje. Evo, možemo pognuti glave. I onda ćemo otpjevati još jednu pjesmu. Dragi Gospode, hvala ti za ovo svjedočanstvo. Hvala ti, Gospode, zato što vidimo tebe u našem bratu, Gospode, i u bratu Dawsonu, i bratu Branhamu, i našoj braći i sestrama s kojima smo tu okupljeni, Gospode. Vidimo da iza ovog tjelesnog tijela, iza ovog propadljivog, postoji nešto nepropadljivo, iza ovog prirodnog postoji nešto nadprirodno, Gospode, što nas povezuje. Gospode, vidimo da ti radiš na svojoj nevjesti i da nas dovodiš do tog cilja koji imaš danas, Gospode, da nas pripremiš, da imamo takve karaktere koji su u takvom stanju da mogu i otići na drugu stranu, Gospode. Znamo da nas prvo kući da smrt ne mijenja ništa, nego samo prebivalište, samo lokaciju na kojoj se nalazimo. Ovakvi kakvi smo, naši karakteri koje smo tu izborili, koje će biti prenešeni na drugu stranu, Gospode. Vidimo da ti brusiš naše karaktere, vidimo to, Gospode, da nismo kao ovaj svijet, jer ti radiš na nama i vidimo da ponekad koristiš neke metode kao što su kušnje i problemi i situacije, ali sve to ide na dobro, Gospode. Molim te da nas oblikuješ sebi nalik, Gospode, nalik ljudima koje si oblikovao u Bibliji, kao što si oblikovao Abrahama, Pavla, Petra, Ivana, Gospode, proroka u našoj generaciji, da tako oblikuješ nas i da ljudi vide, Gospode, tebe u nama. I da mi vidimo tebe jedni u drugima. Molimo te u ime Isusa Krista. Amen.
Amen.
Možemo otpjevati jednu pjesmu. Otpjevući riječi Krista. svjedočanstvo može poručiti, onda je to da je Isus Krist isti jučer, danas i zauvijek. Zaista je lijepo da ne morate pričati o Isusu od prije 2000 godina. Ovako, nego vidimo da je isti i danas. I to je, tu smo da to svjedočimo i da to vjerujemo i živimo. Vi koji dijelite letke i vizitke i to, evo, došao je jedan čovjek, ali tako, izdržao je 10 minuta ovog svjedočanstva, možda dođe ponovo, ne znamo, a možda ovaj uskoro dođe neko ko izdrži do uznesenja. Tako da, rezultata ima, ali tako? Tako, evo, neka Bog blagoslovi tog čovjeka, ovaj, možda dođe ponovo, možda nije došao na početku, pa možda ovaj, nije odmah polovio o čemu se radi. Evo, toliko, neka Bog blagoslovi. Stavit ćemo svjedočanstvo na internet pa da se mogu šerati, da ljudi mogu to poslušati. Amen.